Hey, before we start this episode, just want to remind you that the Fearless Woman's Guide to Starting a Business is available everywhere that you like to buy books, and you can get it in paperback, Kindle, and even as an audiobook. I'll have links on where you can purchase in the podcast notes. Okay, back onto the show.
You are listening to One Broken Mom, a podcast dedicated to raising awareness about mental health, parenting, and self-improvement. I'm the host, Ami Quirconi. One Broken Mom is not a family show. It is intended for adults only and may contain adult language. Sometimes the topics are serious, but you can count on the episodes to be entertaining. Also, One Broken Mom is not offering any psychiatric or medical diagnosis. We're just here giving away useful and important information. So, if you're ready to hear real talk by real people so that we can all get better together, then you're in the right place, and welcome. All right, everyone, welcome back to another episode of One Broken Mom. I am going to be going off on a different path with this episode, and I think you still are going to enjoy it tremendously. I have a special guest who's joining me from New Jersey. So, by day, he's a therapist in a New Jersey clinic. And by night, he's part of a dynamic duo of podcasters who do a show called Pop Psych 101, a show that dives into the mental wellness or illness of the characters you know, love, and maybe even hate on TV, in movies, and in books. So welcome to this episode of One Broken Mom, Ryan Engelstad.
Thank you so much, Ami. I'm happy to be here. And yes, that I appreciate the description. I like thinking of myself as that sort of dual role. And we have a lot of fun on the show. So it's something that I try to both give to myself as a different way of working in mental health, but also to people who may not have access to the kind of information I am able to work with in my practice.
Cool. Yeah, I feel a little bit of that dual personality myself. You know, I tell everybody that by day I'm a business consultant or coach or, you know, and actually I just started working for a nursing company as the director of recruiting. So I'm building out this recruiting department. But by night I'm a self-help vigilante. So I identify, you know, kind of here with the dual role. So why have you taken this approach? I want you to describe Pop Psych 101, because I love it. I think it's brilliant. And I'd like to hear about why you're doing this particular show and this approach that you've taken with teaching people about mental wellness.
Sure. So, and it's been kind of a path, a long winding path that I've been on. I've been in the mental health field for almost 14, 15 years. But I've always had this feeling that the information that I get to talk about with people on a daily basis is so valuable, and I wish that there were more ways that I could spread it to the larger population. So people that might not be in therapy, people that might not be in treatment for various health or wellness issues. So I've always tried to find sort of the sort of quickest, easiest, most accessible way for people to get that information. I've done some writing, which is, in some ways, more laborious, in some ways less than doing a podcast. But it's obviously, for me, I think the answer to that question is finding a way to make the information accessible to people. So my first podcast that I had was just sort of talking to professionals and talking to people about mental health issues, whether it be their own or if they're in practice themselves, their work, and sort of why they do it. And that was great, very enjoyable, but it felt like that was the sort of conversation you could hear anywhere. And I wanted the information that people were going to be getting to be something a little bit more unique, but also something that, you know, people watch movies, people read books, people watch TV every day. And the depictions of mental health, mental illness are often accurate, are often not. So yeah, basically it's been trying to find an accessible way for people to understand this information. So when you hear depression, I think people have a very sort of stereotypical perception of what that is. And in reality, you know, there's a lot of, obviously it's a spectrum, but you know, in television and movies, we get sometimes very extreme depictions of what depression looks like. And sometimes really appropriate, just like any character, any person can be sort of exposed to these symptoms and can suffer from them. So for me, I wanted to start this really second podcast to create a way for people to get this information that would sort of make it a little bit lighter too. Because I think to your point, being able to talk about this stuff in a fun, lighter way, hopefully makes it a way that people are going to have more conversations with it. You can talk about, you know, ELSA, which is a episode we put out last week, much easier than you can just sort of talking about, you know, what is post-traumatic stress disorder. That's heavy stuff. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's been sort of the path and the long winding path, but we're really excited with the response that we've gotten so far.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I like it because it is, you know, I don't want to say the word subversive, but when you are in the field of raising awareness around mental health and mental wellness, you know, the word that we get used, we hear about all the time is stigma, right? And so mm-hmm. the big hurdle in front of everybody is to get over, you know, and it's not just one stigma. There's a variety of these stigmas that are out Absolutely. There from guilt and shame and, you know, an embarrassment and just whatever it is that holds people back from digging in. Or even misinformation, you know, mm-hmm. and that's, you know, and pieces of it of, you know, we don't know really what the state of mental health is. I mean that collectively as a culture of like, you know, learning about brain development. And I know these are some points that my listeners have heard me say before. And mm-hmm. so any way you can kind of intrude into the thinking of everybody, like I'm totally game for. And so, you know, this is a subversive tactic in my opinion. Yeah. I wrote a note to myself. It's all fun and games until someone accidentally learns something.
That's right.
And so I like the approach. And so for anybody that does want something that feels, you know, really palatable and fun, then I, you know, I'm behind it. So that's why I think that's brilliant. That's why you and I are talking to each other.
Yeah.
So tell me, as you go through and you kind of look at pop culture and you look at the movies and the TV shows that are out there and you're dissecting them, and I will tell you, I have to put this out there, I can't watch TV and movies the same now either. Like once the kind of the veil comes back and you start to see, like there are no villains to me anymore. There are no good guys, bad guys. Like everybody's got trauma. And yep. so I can't, you know, I'm not, you know, a social worker, therapist, psychologist, but well-read enough now to know, gosh, now I have, you know, empathy for everybody out there. Yeah. And so I know you do the same thing because this is like actually your show. So have you ever noted any dangerous or untrue messages that have been put out in movies or television shows as it relates to the field and the understanding of our mental wellness and our mental well-being?
Yeah. So the biggest example of this recently was 13 Reasons Why, which we did a whole episode on. Because of the way they talk about suicide, and it's tough for me as a therapist because I'm happy, obviously, that these conversations are happening. But the way it's depicted is this sort of like fictionalized, almost glorified way of getting revenge, of teaching people a lesson, of getting back at people who hurt you. And we understand why the main character wanted to do that. But the other problem that we have with it is that she's very much still a character in the show. And in real life, you commit suicide, you don't get to have this really active, ongoing influence anymore. So for me, I think that was the most dangerous, at least recent example that I could think of, was the show that was in a lot of ways just like a soap opera. So in that way, it was very popular, especially among teens and young adults. But the way that they portrayed both the character's various mental health issues and the act of suicide itself and sort of the impact that it had, to me, felt really dangerous. And we saw that in the communities, both in which I work with and in the mental health community at large, that there were real problems with the way that kids were receiving this information. And then you saw the sort of blowback, you know, Netflix had to put out the sort of warning message before each episode, and they did like a mental health special with the writers and the actors to sort of more appropriately address some of the mental health concerns and the actions by the characters. So all those things that happened were good, but the fact that it happened was because of the sort of, I hesitate to say irresponsible portrayal, but because of the extreme nature of the portrayal, it had a lot of problematic issues.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. And, you know, and that's such it's a scary topic too, or a scary place to fail when you're a parent of a teenager and, you know, you're just, and sometimes that's probably one of the big things about movies and TV shows is that is a, that's a place that's beyond our control. I mean, you know, as a parent, like I could, I suppose put a bunch of parental settings and really kind of dictate what my kids are going to watch, but they get to a point where that's out of your hands. And that's then true. If that's the messaging that they're getting out of there, then yeah, it's, I mean, it's terrifying. You know, I had some engaged conversations with my daughter in particular, because we have had her in that state of suicide ideation, you know, which happens. And then when you have that, that kind of a show, and then other kids see that and then begin to have this very romantic view of what's going on, then, I mean, but, you know, William Shakespeare started it, you know, if we want to go back to, you know, suicide goes. So, you know, the other day I actually mentioned this on my show and on my own Facebook page and stuff, because I was watching like G.I. Joe a couple of, you know, 2 weeks ago, you know, not like major cinematic, you know, masterpiece, but one of the characters in there was supposed to be this brilliant scientific minded person, Scarlett O'Hara. And she had made the comment that emotions are not science. And so therefore she didn't believe in any of them. And this was like 2008. Wow, right. Yeah. And so that's why I sit there and I go, you know, there are some things being kind of portrayed out there that aren't entirely accurate, and and can be, you know, kind of dangerous to believe everything you see in a movie. Not that,
and that's a theme that we touch on a lot, is that the way that, whether it's directors or writers or special effects people, try to make the portrayal of mental health and mental illness issues sort of entertaining, or sort of maybe it's more palatable, maybe it's just more interesting on the screen. I understand the desire to do that, because, you know, if it's just you're seeing a character on the screen and, you know, their depression or their anxiety is sort of going on inside their head, you have to find a way to illustrate that. You have to find a way to make people sort of understand it. Maybe you even have to find a way to make it funny or interesting, the sort of ways that people try to make this ultimately entertainment, right? Something that people are going to want to watch, going to want to read, going to want to listen to. But the ways that people do that, another example that comes to mind is in A Beautiful Mind, is they take essentially schizophrenia and they blow it out to this sort of exaggerated, you know, almost like comic book, where you see the characters and you see the people in detail and you have ongoing conversations with them. And obviously, to a certain extent, that does happen. But the way it's portrayed in the movie is, again, sort of irresponsible, where now we're wondering, wait, everyone that's schizophrenic has just these people that they see that nobody else sees and has conversations with them, but then can have sort of like eureka moments where, because their clothes haven't changed their whole life, now they're just cured and everything goes better. Like, you can think your way through it. So there's a lot of different ways that it can go wrong, which is why it is such a tough subject to tackle in media.
Yeah. Yeah. And it goes back to, you know, again, like my whole, you know, for me, the way now I observe, you know, TV shows and movies, that, you know, it's hard to hate the villains anymore, because, you know, and we have done, I think we, you know, I'm not taking responsibility for it, but, you know, as a culture, we set people up on a pedestal to hate, and then we set people up on a pedestal to love. Right. Mm-hmm. And the ones that we are used to hating are, you know, there's a reason that they're there, you know, and it's not because of some innate, you know, evil that was, you know, in their blood. But that's the way we've believed to this point in time, is that people were born defective. And so anybody that we encounter in our world around us that has any of these undesirable or vile traits must be a defect, you know, and that we avoid them, or, you know, there's something wrong with them that can never be changed. And we know that in mental wellness now, mm-hmm. and neurobiology, that that's not the case.
Yeah.
And so, you know, seeing, you know, hopefully seeing that shift of being able to develop greater empathy with different characters and not, you know, vilifying. I mean, a villain is great. We love to have them, you know, because we, you know, and I, like I said, we'll talk about this a little bit more. I love superhero movies. You can't have a superhero without a villain. Right. But I do like the, you know, some of the transitions that we do see, and being able to have greater empathy there. Do you think that there's a value in using television shows and TV shows and movies as a way of teaching empathy, like maybe in particular to our kids? Because I know from books, one of the biggest, you know, greatest values of reading for children to read is that what you said, the story of what's really going on is in the mind of the character, and that that can't be really played out with without flashback scenes or, you know, right. weird ghost voices over the, you know, voiceovers. But in a book, you are reading page after page of what is the characters are processing, the good ones and the bad ones, and you do get that. And that is that understanding of what's going on inside another person is the root of having empathy there. You know, with kids still reading, but with movies and TVs, is there a way to be able to leverage television shows to be able to teach that empathy for our kids?
So I definitely think so. It all comes down to how much emphasis the movie or TV show puts on entertainment versus education and versus the sort of desire to show empathy and to even teach empathy. You know, I think about my own daughter. I have a 3-year-old who obviously is just now getting into television shows and movies, and something like Sesame Street, which for me is the gold standard, you know, where they have characters who are homeless now and characters who have mental
autism.
Illness.
Autism.
Yep. Yeah, autism. Yes, thank you. Yeah, there was a character they introduced recently. And they really do a great job at showing the reality, I think, for these characters, but also showing that just because that's the reality doesn't mean that they need to be treated any differently. They do need empathy. They do need sort of certain approaches to help them in the case of the character who has autism. So that is extremely both impressive and for me as a parent, like that's where I would direct my child, given the option is okay. You know, if we're going to go to entertainment, can we try to find something that has this? And luckily for me, you know, like yourself, she's very much into superheroes and anyone who has superpowers. So then you get the sort of other end of the spectrum where they could still learn some empathy, but it's also just a little bit more mindless entertainment. So for me, stuff like Paw Patrol, which is great, very addictive. We sort of joke about it in the house, how she could watch it over and over again. And it does teach empathy. It teaches, you know, when your family members or community members are in trouble, you go help them, you make sure they're okay, problem solving, all that sort of stuff. But at the same time, it just sort of, in some ways, oversimplifies things. You know, and it's funny now that I'm overanalyzing Paw Patrol, but it's true because we do sort of think about what your kid is taking away. And if it's just, you know, a meteor can come down from space and give us superpowers. That's fun for make-believe and fun for imagination and fun, all that stuff. But if we're thinking about from an empathy perspective and even from a real life perspective, you know, there's no actual policeman in Paw Patrol. It's just, if there's a problem, you call the Paw Patrol and everything gets better, which is great. But for me, this is why I feel bad for my daughter having a therapist for a father is like, I maybe selfishly direct her towards the things that have a little bit more real life representation, yeah. as I do now on my show.
Fair enough. Do you think that there's anything about when people like certain types of movies, you know, does it say something about maybe their mental, you know, well-being? And I don't use the word illness really on my show. It's, yeah, we all have various, you know, mental well-beings and states. And so, you know, if somebody's really into action movies or spy movies or horror or the rom-com, you know, what is it in there maybe that says something about that person, like in their real life, you know, and where they are with their mental wellness?
Yeah, it's interesting because you can take the sort of approach that all entertainment is escapism, where we're just sort of looking to feel something other than what we're feeling right now. And sure, if you're bored, you might want something that's more action, adventure, sort of more engaging, those sort of neurotransmitters even. You know, if you're feeling lonely, you might want something that's more, you know, romantic or connection based. You know, these things are definitely true. The questions that I ask myself is, why do I want to watch a horror movie right now? Like, what's going on for me that I want to feel that? And oftentimes it's, it could be boredom. But it's also, you know, I'm feeling maybe anxious, and seeing a scary thing get resolved helps me feel better. Like, oh, the problem is just this weird ghost spirit, and once they did that, then everything was fine. So it sort of, it brings it back to, if I'm feeling out of control, I can see sort of a representation of something that might be out of control. Like you think about the horror movies of, you know, Freddy Krueger was this uncontrollable spirit. Yeah, but you know, there's also sometimes a happy ending. There's also sometimes a resolution even to those out of control things. So I try to ask myself that, and obviously with patients that I work with, I try to ask them that the same thing, not just with media, but things like social media. You know, what are you getting out of that thing that you're finding yourself going to, whether it's a movie, a book, a program, an app, whatever it is, what are you looking for and how effectively is that thing doing that for you?
Yeah. And I, you know, I had found myself kind of doing that as well. You know, I, prior to a year and a half ago, I think it's been now since the, since my last relationship ended, and it's kind of the relationship that started this whole path for me and change for me. And also around the same time, because it was, they were all linked together, you know, my kids came in and lived with me full time, you know, they had been living with their dad and that whole change. So huge, huge shift in turmoil, yeah. And good and with good results. I mean, everybody that knows everything is just amazing because of it. And so you kind of have to, you know, roll through that. Before that moment, you know, there was a variety of shows that I like to watch, and I, you know, Supernatural still on top of my list. So sure. I still go there. Love the Winchester brothers. And, but I, you know, I did like, you know, very intellectual shows, you know, I like the spies, you know, occasionally the action adventure. And I found afterwards though, that I couldn't do any of them. Like, and I sat there and I did, like you said, I sat and reflected in on why I couldn't watch shows that used to be my favorite shows anymore. And that's when I actually started to find myself, you know, I, you know, found an old movie of, you know, it was one of the old Marvel movies. I think it was like Iron Man again, watched it again. Mm-hmm. And I started to then link in and connect to a place of where it became like a true escapism.
Yeah.
And I still find myself like, you know, I tried watching Punisher, watched a couple of episodes because I really liked the series, but I was like, man, I'm not feeling that right now. Like that darkness that's
it's
in
energy.
There.
Yeah,
it is. It's the energy. It's like, I like Frank Castle and all that, but I don't feel that I want that type of energy or need that type of energy, or that I can actually, I guess the other statement is that I have this mental capacity to handle that energy. Like sometimes I think it ebbs and flows, and it did for me was super stressed. The more stressed, the more lighthearted I wanted. Give me dumb comedies because I don't want anybody's stress. Like I don't have any room for anybody else's stress in my life and stuff. And so I think that is interesting. And I've always like rom-coms, not my thing. You know, maybe that's the avoidant part of me. I don't know. But yeah, I've never been the person that ever got into it. So people, you know, girlfriends would invite you. And I hate to say stereotypical, but it's usually girlfriends would invite you. And like, no, just show me a good superhero film and I'm totally in. But don't invite me to go see the Notebook, all these big romantic comedies. Never seen any of them. So I did want to go.
And it's like, the escapism thing too of a superhero movie where, you know, it's funny because there are aspects of therapy, where we sort of do some like visualization and things like that. So if you visualize yourself as a superhero, what that does for your self-image. Mm-hmm. So I think for people who love these types of movies, and I'm certainly one of them, is that I'm certainly one of them too, where seeing this hero's journey, right, where you can see this person who in many cases is just a normal person overcoming in a lot of cases tragedy, and being able to then have the tragedy become something bigger than what it was, you know, whether it's helping them develop a superpower, giving them a purpose, giving them a cause. I just think that, you know, and I don't want to overanalyze everything. I think that's a danger, but I think there's something real there that we like the stuff we like because it brings us a comfort in whatever that time is for us. I relate to the comedies thing too. I've been through periods of my life where the only thing I watch is The Office reruns just over and over and over again. I've been through the series countless times at this point. So it's real. And that's, you know, that's just me wanting to maybe feel that same comfort that I felt in college or who knows. Right. But yeah, it's just sort of easy and relaxing. The other thing is that, and I can pull up the research if you're interested. They've done studies on people who watch like action movies or even just the news, which a lot of time is very intense before bed, and the sort of sleep studies that they've done almost across the board, things that have like action and news oriented does not do anything good for your sleep. Mm. So keep stuff like that in mind too.
Yeah. Yeah. I can believe that. And that's actually, that's interesting that you point that out, because I don't watch the news. It's not that I'm an uninformed person. You know, local news means more to me than watching any national news and stuff like that. And it's because, you know, again, I hate to sound cynical, but when you realize that it's, you know, even the news is populated with, you know, high intensity headlines, and not really the news,
right.
Then you're just like, you know, my own personality is I hate being baited into emotions. I hate being baited or drawn by you to feel or do certain things. And, you know, that's a good thing. And it's also a bad thing of like, you know, but yeah, I the news parts of it for me are just no, thank you.
You're not the only one. I see that that's happening with probably a majority of my patients at this point. Just like news,
giving up on it.
Yeah.
It becomes too, I mean, it's now, it feels like it's almost too much of a soap opera. And, you know, to be honest, it doesn't matter which house you live in.
No,
All right. It's there. So, now, you know, the show One Broken Mom is about self-help, mental wellness, and also parenting. And so, you know, coming back to, you know, if we as a parent notice that our kids are really kind of gravitating towards a certain theme in the types of shows that they like to watch or the movies that they go out to, and that maybe, you know, maybe darker, you know, and I would say like the horror movies are like that or something like that, you know, should we get concerned, you know, and show some concern for, you know, that interest, you know, that they may be developing in something that we don't find it or, you know, that we think is maybe a sign of something scarier?
So for me, the interest on its own is not a concern for me. You know, someone who's into horror movies, someone who's into action movies, someone who's into even like serial killers and true crime, I think are a big thing right now. So the interest on its own is not where the danger is. It's when the interest sort of turns into other behaviors. And that could be everything from, you know, who your child socializes with. So if that stuff changes, if things like the way that they dress or way that they act changes, sort of looking for these things on top of the interest that would say, okay, it's not just that they're into horror movies, they're now dressing differently. And again, I should say that none of these things are bad signs on their own. It's just sort of things to pay attention to. So dressing differently, you know, changing who they socialize with, if their interest in whatever thing starts to supersede other interests that they have, so they fall out of interest with things that they have traditionally been interested with, then these start to be signs of maybe things you want to have a conversation with. Again, not necessarily to discourage that interest, because as you know, as I know, with kids, if you start to say, well, maybe we should take a break from the horror movies, that's the only thing they want to watch.
They grab their phone and they're secretly watching it. Yeah.
Oh, you don't want me to watch that? Okay. Now that's the only thing I'm going to watch.
Right. I'm going to individuate from you, Mom.
So it's not so much discouraging it as having a conversation, helping them develop the same interest of, you know, what's going on for them that they're drawn to this. Is it just a fun thing that they're into? And is it a phase, or is it something that, you know, says something else about what's going on for them? And the other thing I try to do, whether that be with my daughter, or certainly you can do this with kids of an older age as well, is that can you take the interest in the piece of media and build on it into other maybe positive things? So do they want to write? Do they want to illustrate, draw, paint? You know, for my daughter, who's very much into imagination and things, okay, we watched one episode of Paw Patrol, and now we're going to play Paw Patrol. You are going to be a puppy, or you're going to be a dog, or you're going to be one of the characters, and we're going to do our own episode, and we're going to sort of make it our own thing. So I try to take the interest and build it into other areas of her life.
Yeah,
and it's not just about watching the show on repeat over and over again.
Which breaks up the monotony for you.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, we all know from parenting small kids that it, you know, it's like get used to watching the same thing. And then it doesn't change. I have bad news for you, Ryan. I had to listen to the same song in my car 5 times in a row driving from dropping off one of my daughter's friends to coming back home, which is like an hour away. So it's just a different form of repeat.
Yeah, my daughter's pretty good about that. She'll make a deal with me where she gets to listen to one of her songs and she gets to listen and then I get to pick a song. although when I quote unquote pick the song, she picks one of the songs that she thinks I like. So, but it's close. I'll take it. I'll take a back and forth.
That's funny. You know, I'll point out, you know, an example where you're talking about like expanding on it. You know, my daughter, it's actually kind of a funny thing. I share this with my kids where we, when they were littler, we used to watch Ghost Hunters. And, and because for me growing up, I had an interest in the macabre, not the bloody gory, but like the ghosty, you know, sure, supernatural parts. And I think that, you know, again, without us getting too far down the analyst path here, you know, part of it was, death. And there was a fear of death and abandonment, mm-hmm, that goes back to, you know, a moment when I was 6 years old. And then as I noticed, you know, kind of much more in reflection than being in the moment, like I love checking out books from the library that had to do with real life ghost stories. Sure. And then I started to write, and I did that with my daughter too, was that she showed some interest in writing. And so then I started writing my own ghost stories or, you know, what other tales and stuff like that. So it does translate, you know, as they get older to be able to take, you know, what their interest might be. I joke that I was goth, but I didn't have the greasy eyeliner or the black clothes. Okay. Like, you didn't know that, you know, I had that interest. And even then, like I graduated into college and it expanded into Stephen King. Like I have just like,
oh, sure,
every single one of Stephen King books. Yeah. And so I know that the dark theme doesn't always mean, but when I look back, the dark theme was indicative of a mindset that I had. You know, I was struggling in middle school, and the stories that I was writing were, you know, I had one friend at some point, her mom read one of my stories and they were concerned about suicide. And I'm not the person that ever really strongly contemplated it growing up, because it's not my wiring. My wiring is, no, I'm just going to get through this and fight through it. But it doesn't mean you don't kind of struggle with the depression, you know, that comes.
Yeah. And the thoughts can happen, whether you have the intent or not behind it. Sure.
Yeah, right, right. And so that's why I asked that question, is because when I see, you know, my kids have an interest in it, my daughter, we watch American Horror Story, totally probably inappropriate for a 13-year-old, don't care, because that's just who I am. And I think that part of that interest isn't necessarily hers as much as it's shared interest. It's a way of her and I connecting together, and that's the way my kids connected. My son isn't interested in any of that, you know, now at all. At 16, but my daughter still, they like ghost stories. I mean, she loves it. And I think it's the intensity, right? I mean, that's one of the things that movies and TV shows do for you, is if you have a life of, you know, spikes of intensity, good and bad, you kind of seek that out. And that's kind of what I feel like I end up going into. I dip into the well of, you know, an Avenger movie because I'm ready to get the dopamine rush. I want that feeling of, you know, here's my coffee mug, people on, you know, won't see it, but that's Activity Girl, which is my self-help vigilante. So it is a superhero cape. And so when I want to feel heroic or, you know, inspired, then I definitely jump that path there. So like I said, a lot of people that do know me know that there is the Marvel, and it is specifically Marvel. I do like DC, but DC's always been a little too dark for me, whereas Marvel's been a little bit more of a lighthearted.
And that's come out in the movies recently too.
And I'm, you know, DC's trying to be funnier, but I don't know, Marvel I think just kind of like trumped it. So, you know, the draw for me was, again, going through that significant like life of people there. I couldn't stomach the stress. I needed heroes. I needed to see the strong ones with a sense of justice always win in the end, even if they, you know, hit in a hurdle and stuff over and over again. And so I'd like for everybody to get a taste of what your show is like. Let's talk about the Avengers here. And I wish I could play the theme song, but I'm sure that would violate all kinds of use rights. And so I'll just, we'll have to pretend there's, you know, superhero music in the background.
Sounds great.
But, you know, I listed out my favorite characters, Peter Quill, you know, Star-Lord from Guardians of the Galaxy, trauma, mom dies when he's 12 and he's abducted by aliens. So he's got a big trauma story there. Tony Stark, trauma, avoidant father, parents die while he's a teenager. Steve Rogers is one of my most favorite ones because he, and I'd like to talk about him a little bit because he's the different. His
no specific trauma necessarily, right?
Well, his dad dies in World War I, and his mom is a nurse and dies of TB. So he's actually an orphan, you know, and he not only is he an orphan, but he's the weak, frail kid who's bullied his whole life. but ends up being like completely virtuous with a very strong and powerful moral compass. Mm-hmm. And so, and doesn't, and, but also appears to be love avoidant, right? So mm-hmm. He's the one, it's like with, you know, these traumas, like how did he go swing the other pendulum, you know, into the direction of where, you know, he became, I did an episode just the other day on the scapegoat where he stood at all cost against, you know, what he felt was really wrong. You've got Gamora and Nebula from the Guardians mm-hmm. of the Galaxy. I mean, they're yeah. the ultimate of childhood trauma, right? Yeah, exactly. Thanos is their dad. They've been pitted against each other. You know, right. Gamora was abducted and her parents murdered. And then Loki, like I said, I can't hate villains. I mean, even Thanos I can identify with where he's going. But Loki's my favorite villain because he was abandoned and then he was adopted.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of like my short list of, you know, the Avengers in there and whatnot. And so what are your thoughts on some of these, you know, some of these guys? I mean, how do we break down the mental wellness of the Avengers?
Well, it's funny because you think about each of their trauma, as we just talked about a little bit. And I think what one of the interesting things that I like to look at is sort of what sort of personality characteristics or even self-defense mechanisms sort of developed as a result. So you take somebody like Peter Quill, this sort of wisecracking, even when he's a leader, it's like, you know, too cool to be a leader, you know. So, and he was someone that, didn't have a dad, lost his mom.
Right. And found out his dad was a really weird guy.
Yeah.
Hasselhoff is his like surrogate dad.
yeah. So, I mean, it's always interesting for me to see what those characteristics that come out as a result. So, and for a lot of them, obviously, it's this sort of heroism thing, right? But even, and I love Tony Stark personally because he has this heroism thing, but he also has this narcissistic streak,
right?
Where you know the things that he does, he's one of the few people that wants to be recognized for it. Like, I'll never forget the first Iron Man movie where he's just like, I am Iron Man. And that was so different from what I think most people saw from superheroes, where it's like, oh no, I don't want anybody to know that this is what I do. And he's the opposite of that. He's, I want you to know that I can do this. I do this by choice. And I'm capable of not just this, but, you know, so much more. So it's just fascinating to me.
Yeah, and you know, with Tony,
the stuff, yeah.
Well, and so with Tony, like everybody, you know, has hated him for being the narcissist, right? Mm-hmm. But yet, when you talk about like the genuine, true narcissistic personality, a narcissist would never take his suit and fly up into, to plug a hole, yeah. right? You know, yeah. And so, so it is like, you know, that's a Hollywood, you know, of here's the narcissist that you love to hate, but really, yeah. we've all, you know, some of us have ran into narcissists. They would never do that.
Yeah, he's the narcissist that also has this this streak, and that I think we can assume comes from his parents as well. His father was not a superhero, but like someone who did good things for people. Mm-hmm. So he has, and I think because of those relationships, and you could go all of them through, whether it be their parents, relationships with their parents as children, to sort of how these things ended up playing out. We actually did a whole episode on Spider-Man after Stan Lee passed. And it was a lot of these mm-hmm. same themes of, you know, this kid might have been just a normal kid. And then his Uncle Ben dies and it sort of sets about all these other things. Obviously that happened after he got his powers, but the path that he was on before Uncle Ben died was like, I'm going to be a wrestler and make money for myself. And that's it. But then the sort of tragedy or trauma sort of sets about this other opportunity. And at least in our heroes' cases, that's resulted in them wanting to help people, wanting to improve things for themselves or their people, in the case of someone like Black Panther. So I love this stuff because, you know, when you think about people that I've worked with who have experienced trauma, you know, the lessons or the sort of negative self-thoughts in a lot of cases that come out as a result of trauma, we can look at characters like this and say, okay, yes, you can experience trauma and it can lead to positive ways of viewing yourself, positive ways of viewing what you want to accomplish in life. You don't have to be negatively defined by these bad things that happen to you. You can take them and turn them into positive things that you want to accomplish with your life. And I think that's, for me, the most powerful way of looking at these characters.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, and that may be like at a subconscious level, one of the reasons, not overanalyzing this, but why I like Loki as the character, at least the one that's, you know, on the movies, is because, you know, this mindset is fluid. You know, and we can go either way. And he does, you know, he goes, you know, just fiercely loyal to his brother and will do, you know, these acts of altruism, you know, at his own expense and peril, and then swing back over into, you know, behaving selfishly because again, he's got his abandonment issues and his adoption issues and not feeling as good as his golden child brother, you know, Thor and all that stuff. And I appreciate the fact that that is now communicated through movies, you know, that we are allowed to see Loki actually move, you know, back and forth, and we love him and we hate him and stuff. And like I said, even with, I was actually surprised by Infinity War, and I was surprised by the character of Thanos, that a great deal of time actually has been spent in that movie to have us understand what his motivation actually is, instead of him just being, you know, as he's been appeared throughout the movie, you know, before as this just unrelenting evil power there, we knew more about what was motivating him. And I sat there and I was like, I was impressed from that perspective of like, wow, we've never really seen this in movies before, where it is as if there is this change and shift in the writing and the dialogue, you know, of contemporary pop culture. That is shifting towards this empathetic, you know, understanding. You know, like I said, Supernatural is one of those shows too that I really love because the brothers do spend time, they have their moments where they spend time talking to each other. And, you know, and that is healthy to me, even if they, you know, do some really silly, stupid things at times. But they do, the show is connected about how they do find ways to actually express their feelings. And I know that behind the scenes, you know, one of the actors actually has dealt with depression and he's dealt with suicide, you know, ideation and stuff like that. And so knowing that Hollywood is possibly transitioning, maybe even for the better, of being able to, again, subversively teach us, you know, about mental wellness in a way, I think could be really powerful for us as a culture in a community.
Yeah, the characters don't have to be defined by a mental illness. It can just be part of them, not the whole thing. And I think that's what, you know, this transition has been. It's, you know, instead of a character who's just defined by their schizophrenia, it's someone who can have a diagnosis of a mental illness and also be a full character who lives and loves and sometimes makes mistakes and sometimes does really altruistic things. So that's, and that's why I'm hopeful that, you know, whether it be my show or just the feedback to these types of movies and books and shows, that we do want to see, I think, more realistic representations. And that's why I was actually really excited by Thanos too, because I think it also makes for a better story. When I think of a bad guy like Galactus, like the bad guy from Fantastic Four, who's just this crazy universe force in the universe. We don't know. He wants to eat planets. That's basically all we know about him. Versus someone like Thanos, who we get to, you know, even if we don't agree with the way he's going about things, we get to understand a little bit of why he's making these decisions and how he's come to be in the place that he's in. So just from a storytelling standpoint, I appreciate that. But also being able to, as we were talking about before with the kids, being able to empathize even with the bad guy is a strength. You know, assuming we're not actually facing off against him.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. Well, so let's talk about now Pop Psych 101, now that we've totally, you know, ruined Marvel Avengers for anybody that didn't think as deeply about it as you and I just did. What do you do? Talk about this show, because like I said, I really do like the show because it is a very fascinating, fun way of, again, learning and understanding about mental wellness. And you've brought a very unique, you and your partner brought a very unique perspective to it. And I love, you know, shining lights on, you know, cool and unique things. So talk about the show a little bit, like some of the episodes and stuff that you've done.
I'd be happy to. So I appreciate that. So I am a therapist. So we talk about how we have two perspectives on the show. I'm a therapist. So I look at these movies and books and shows from that perspective and do a lot of the overanalyzing. And my co-host and executive producer, Mike, is someone who has been open about his own mental health struggles. So he watches these things through the lens of his own experience. So then we kind of come to these conversations where Mike can relate to some of the characters or some of the experiences within the different character dynamics. And I can In some cases, relate as well. As we talked about, I'm a father, and I've certainly had my own mental health things, as everyone does. So we come to it from those different perspectives. So we both try to explain what we're seeing. Just to give an example, our episode that's out Monday, today, where they were recording January 28th, is the movie 50-50, which was a movie with Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Seth Rogen, in which Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character is diagnosed with cancer. So in the sort of emotional impact that it has. So basically, we take a movie like that. We say, okay, how realistic is this depiction both of mental illness or mental health and the sort of interactions between the characters? How realistic is that? And then we sort of break it down from there. You know, if there are problems with how it's depicted, what would be, let's say, a more appropriate way of being depicted? And then we also take it to real life. If this were happening to, in other words, if these characters were real people, how would I interact with them as a therapist? What suggestions would I give to either the main character or the family or the friends to support this person? So we try to then sort of take what the movie presents and then turn it and say, okay, if this were happening in real life, what would it look like? And what we want to try to do to help this person or help this family or help this group of people, whatever the movie might be. So that's I think the best summary that I can give. And we have a lot of fun with it. We try to do sort of like a very serious half where we tackle like the real mental health issues or the real character dynamic issues. And then we try to do something fun with it as well. So recently we watched the new movie Beautiful Boy with Steve Carell, and his son is a heroin addict, or I should say he's a meth addict. And in the second half, or it was the second half, and we just did a deleted scene where we treated the movie as if it were a alternate universe episode of The Office. And if Michael Scott was actually this character and this father, this person who was a meth addict. And we just fleshed that out and made like a whole fictional universe as if this were The Office instead of A Beautiful Boy. So we try to have fun with it too. And that we've got a lot of good feedback from that. So we're going to do that too. We want people to have fun and be able to talk about these things in a light and even silly way. Because, I mean, when you break it down, the things that happen inside of our brains are fascinating and interesting and sometimes silly and weird, and we need to cover all that stuff. So
right
that's Pop Psych 101.
And it neutralizes it, right? It takes the fear away from it, and it takes away you know, and the other piece of it that I think is really great is, you know, being able to talk psychology without it feeling like whoop, just went over your head, you know, absolutely. That it's all you know, therapist and clinic talking and a bunch of abbreviations and diagnosis terms and stuff like that. I mean, that makes it, that's so totally inaccessible to everybody else out there, and why people don't just grab, you know, a book or a white paper and read up on psychology. So bringing it in into a way. And so for anybody out there that really, you know, that is into, movies and TV shows and stuff like that, and, you know, and is wanting to, you know, I call it kind of wading out into the surf of, you know, learning and understanding this world around us and how we're all learning more about, you know, what's going on in our heads and how weird and fascinating it is. Then, you know, that the show is definitely, I was funny because your holiday episodes were like the Muppets movie. So like, there's no topic as taboo on your show.
Right, we did. Yeah, we did the Muppets. It was. It wasn't like the Holiday Blues. It was because
it was embitterment.
Yes, thank you. Chronic embitterment disorder, which is not a real diagnosis, but something that's sort of more casual in the mental health world. We talked about Scrooge, but we did the Muppets version of the Scrooge movie, which just made it much more fun to talk about.
Yeah, totally. Cool. Well, Ryan, I appreciate what you're doing out there. I appreciate you taking the time to talk with me. So it's not early for you, but it's early for me out here on the West Coast and stuff. I think you've got, like, I genuinely mean, I think you have a great thing. I think this was a cool episode, you know, for, you know, One Broken Mom isn't always so serious. I do like to have some fun with it. And so I appreciate the brevity of us being able to talk about this topic, and hopefully some people, you know, kind of thinking about their TV movie watching habits a little bit differently, and not in a bad way, but just in a newly reflective way. And
that's so, right.
Thank you so much for being on One Broken Mom with me. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Ami. It's and thank you for everything that you're doing. It's great to see parenting being talked about in a very real and occasionally light way as well. So thank you for everything you're doing.
Cool. Thank you for listening to One Broken Mom. You can find podcast notes on my website at amiquericone.com, and there I'll provide all links to all of the resources that we mentioned on the episode. Also, if you have any questions, comments, or ideas for other episodes, feel free to send me an email. And if you are interested in sponsoring the show, I'd love to have you be a part of the team. Finally, if you like what you hear, please share the podcast and leave a review so that others can find it. We are all here to get better together. I am the host, Ami Quercone, and as always, I am super grateful to have you as a listener. Until next time, have a great day.